it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, St. Louis, DGS 101 FM, KMOX. Happy Wednesday to everybody. Wednesday, right? Yeah.
I guess so.
So, fair warning, I'm in my quarterly bad mood.
Uh-oh.
Only happens quarterly, doesn't even happen monthly.
And it just happened?
It just sort of like, there are a few things that are bugging me, which I'm not going to talk about because by tomorrow I won't care. And I'm old enough and smart enough and wise enough now to realize like when that happens. You know, when you're like, oh, I could talk to the person about this, but I'll change my mind tomorrow. It's my mental illness doesn't come out in meanness or grumpy or bad moods except about once a quarter.
All right.
And then it just feels, it's like if anyone out there is like this, it just feels the same as when you get a stomach ache or a pain in your knee. It's just there. It's just like, oh, here it is. Hello, darkness, my old friend, you know, and you just kind of got to get through it. So, which is harder to do when you do a 4-hour radio show, but it's easier to do when you've done it for 25 years, you have a relationship with the audience, and you can just go, hey, here's the deal.
That's a good point.
It really helps.
Yeah.
You know, because the only thing that could make it worse is having to fake it for 4 hours. You know, fake being Jolly Rancher.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, we're just not feeling it, but you got to somehow paint the face and put on the hands and be like, yeah.
I've always said this job's like being a high-priced hooker.
Mm-hmm.
You show up. You do your job, whether you feel like it or not. You go home, you take a shower, and you buy something expensive.
All righty, then. That's an interesting description.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
It's pretty accurate.
Pretty accurate.
Well, except you're probably not judged for doing this job. People people tend to be a little judgy about the other.
You ever do one of your shows, Rach, and you're just not in the mood?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Part of the job, though.
Yeah, you just have to make it happen. And then also, it's important to keep in mind what we do is very cool. Like, even when it is a bad day, even when you don't feel like doing it, you have to kind of muster up that just that gratefulness and that blessed feeling that you get to be in this position. And that helps.
Yeah, it doesn't help me. I know what you're saying, and I wish I were that kind of person, but it doesn't. Mm. Like, I know all those things are true, but feeling and telling myself good things doesn't help.
Really?
Yeah. It kind of pisses that guy off inside me.
Oh, he's so like, you get pushback.
Yeah, he's like, shut the F up. Just let me have my bad mood. Quit trying to, you know, put glaze on it.
Yeah, I get you.
This is an interesting job because of the nature of, like, the clocks and the schedule. Like, 1 o'clock is going to come whether you're ready for it or not.
Yeah, there's no I'll be there at 1:30.
Yeah, there's no like, I'm a little behind today. Let's push this back 10 minutes or whatever. It's like, you got to be there in the seat.
Yeah.
Race ready go. For it.
Yep.
Tell you one thing. Help me get off my chest. Because we don't talk a lot about Trump. It just pisses half the people off. But I will talk about, so there's this professor named Steven Pinker, who I believe is at Harvard. And he's just next level genius, and he's a social psychologist. And he talks about social norms and how important they are. And he describes a social norm as, for example, Wheels, I know that you know that I know that you know this thing.
Right.
We all know it.
Right.
We all know the sky is blue. We all know that water's wet. And until recently, politically, things used to be like that. And the left and the right would say, the sky is clearly blue, but we see it as light blue. You see it as dark blue. Let's try to work this out. Or if not, we'll have an election and we'll decide whether it's going to be light blue or dark blue. And lately, and a lot of it is Trump and his personality and the way he conducts himself. But like the stuff with the Epstein letter, it's a great example. I don't understand why people don't use more common sense. And I hate living in a world, in a country, where one side wants you to disbelieve your eyes. So I just want to make one point on this Epstein letter. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that creepy-ass, you know, whatever letter that got into his birthday book and this, like, back and forth between an imaginary Trump and Epstein and you're my best pal and life's a secret, let's keep it that way, and a drawing of a naked pubescent woman and then the signature, which he says is not his but looks exactly like his. Here's what I don't get, and maybe someone could help me with this. If you believe Trump... That's not his. He didn't do it. He didn't sign it. You have to believe that someone did. In 2003-ish, when they were friends openly, before any of this stuff, someone had to prank him or set him up in a way that 20 years later would come back to haunt him. And they had to write this really super weird, messed up thing, get it to Epstein, get it in this birthday book with no one knowing that it wasn't Trump, no one saying, hey, Donald, thank you for that letter I got. I put it in my birthday book. No follow up, no nothing. The person surreptitiously forges it, gets it in the birthday book, and then just stays quiet for 22 years. Does that make sense to anyone? In the law, when you do a case, depending on the kind of case it is, it's what's more likely true. And one thing I always said to people, to juries when I was an attorney, is, look, the guy on the other side from me is very good and very persuasive, but don't check your brain at the door. And don't check your brain with me. If I'm saying something that you think doesn't quite fit, I'm fudging it, I'm exaggerating, then you go against me. Don't check your brain at the door. Which is more likely? That Trump, who we know is creepy, he's been adjudged by a court to have done some terrible things, sent that letter to his buddy, and that was it? And that was just fine for 2003? Or that someone went to this incredible length, pulled off this pretty incredible feat of getting it into this guy's personal stuff that he left behind when he died, forged his signature almost perfectly, and no one ever mentioned it. I kind of don't care either way whether he did or not. It's not an impeachable offense. He wasn't the president back then. It's creepy. It's weird. It's a brick in the wall. But at the end of the day, I don't really care. But I do care when the whole country is told once again to not believe their eyes. Make any sense?
Yep. Very much.
So that's adding to my bad mood.
Yeah, I am feeling kind of similarly. It's strange to see all these things happening before us and just think like, well, you know, the best part is we can't do anything about any of it. So it's like, I mean, whatever, you know, whatever will continue to come out about this, because the situation just seems to be getting worse and darker. And we're all trying to be convinced that there's such a normal thing as a birthday book, which is very strange in itself. We can't do anything. We have no control over it. There's nothing we can do. We can't like get him out of office, and he's not going to leave. So it's like, you know, no matter what happens, we're just stuck with it. The people have the power to kick him out won't do it.
This kind of thing that pisses me off the most, because I'm a grown up. And I realize that elections have consequences. Donald Trump and MAGA have a very different worldview than I do, but they got more votes. So they get to do what they want to do. I'm less bothered by the big sweeping things than I am this kind of stuff. This personal lying to the American public and expecting us to be so stupid that we just go like, oh, that makes sense. That's what gets to me.
Yeah.
That's what sticks in my craw.
Well, what drives me, I mean, more nuts than that, see, because there are a lot of people that would look at all of this stuff that we're seeing, like the birthday letter or whatever, and say that could easily be forged. Anyone could have done that. How do we know it's been in there for 20 years? It could have been just put in there. You know, they believe in the deep state. They believe there is this group of people that are deeply embedded and they just don't want to be uprooted or whatever. I mean, but take that out. 1 year ago, last summer, Donald Trump was explicitly asked by Fox News, would you declassify the Epstein files? And his answer was, yeah. Yeah, I would. And then his official campaign Twitter account tweeted out, President Trump says he will declassify all of the 9/11 files, JFK files, and Epstein files. And he and all of his surrogates were pounding that message home. We'll release the files. So it was a big deal 1 year ago. Big enough for you to use it in your campaign to convince people to vote for you. And now you're calling it a hoax. How does that not set off your alarms?
Yeah.
If you have a shred of common sense, how do those two, forget what anyone outside says. Forget what any Democrat says, any law enforcement official, any lawyer. Look at the difference in what he said and what his people have said from 1 year to the next. And what's the difference? The difference is now he's elected. So now you're in the position where you just do whatever you want. When you're trying to get elected, you're going to say anything. So it could be you knew there was nothing to it and you used it anyway because he was president for 4 years already. And you knew there was nothing, but you threw up BS to get people to vote for you. And or you know there's all those things and you just don't care because it's not convenient for you anymore for whatever the reason is. It could be, if you want to give him all the benefit of the doubt, it could be as simple as, I don't need that anymore. I'm president. What do I care about any of that stuff anymore? It's past, which is how he kind of dismisses it, right? But if you're a rational person, even if you vote for the guy, how do you not take a look at the contradiction from the man himself and from his people from 1 year to the next and not notice that and be weirded out by that?
Because it happens slowly.
Good point.
And you just get beaten down and you just get tired. And like Andrew said, ultimately, there's really nothing you can do except look at the situation and go, oh, I guess he was really good friends with Jeffrey Epstein. Interesting. And then just try to move on with your day. Because what can you do, really? What can you do?
Well, I mean, the reason we all bring it up, it's like, it's almost, Dave, I don't know if you agree with this. Rach, Andrew, I don't know if you guys agree with this, but it's almost like a lot of people are trying to attempt an intervention with people that just won't see it. And you just keep tapping them on the shoulder like, how can you not see it? How can you not see it? It's right there. How do you not see it? Well, that's the point. It doesn't, and this is not defending or taking up for any other person in politics because they're all shady and a lot of them are doing weird, bad things. It's just this point. Forget what about, forget anything else. Well, you have direct contradictions from the person himself just 1 year later. When he had access to all of this and his people had access to all of this for 4 years.
Yeah.
From 2016 to 2020.
Well, like our friend Brian, who is our friend, he's on every day on the stream, says kind of like Kamala Harris in the Dems, right there, stop it.
But this is a good, he's right about the example.
Right, but stop it. Because yeah. I don't do that.
Right.
If someone says something about someone I support, I don't say, but what about your guy?
Yeah.
I agree with you, Brian, that the country was gaslit. I agree with you that there's lots of stuff that Biden and Harris, that has nothing to do with this.
We've also talked about it.
And we also talked about that endlessly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if it's about us, if we talked about that in real time.
You have to go against someone else. There's something wrong right there.
That's the point. It's the what about. And this is where politics is. Not just right to left, but also left to right. What about your guy? What about our guy? Well, there were people at that time defending the Biden thing. Well, what about Trump? It's not a defense.
No, it's not.
It's not.
It's not.
Your defense should be about what you are saying and doing.
Even when they were saying, well, Trump, he has dementia too.
Doesn't matter.
He this, he that, doesn't matter.
Right.
We're talking about Joe Biden.
Right.
And we're talking about his physical and mental capabilities that were just shown in this debate.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And her separate thing now is like, oh, well, now I'm going to tell the truth when I was covering everything up, you know, when it was time to cover it up. Like, well, I don't trust you either. But that's not the subject that was brought up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get the whole, to me, it's like you're missing the whole thing. It's the contradiction that matters. It's not really the details. Why are you changing your story? And not just changing it, complete 180. Complete opposite. It goes from being a big deal.
Very important.
Big deal that all your people are shouting about.
To a hoax.
To, it's nothing. There's nothing there. And it may be nothing there, which means you trumped it up. Sorry, bad pun. I didn't mean to do that. Which means you blew that up during the campaign only to fool people into voting for you.
I don't know. I have this sneaking suspicion that it's highly unlikely that there's nothing there.
Yeah. And,
highly
and,
well,
unlikely.
Even this. Like, if I had sent that creepy-ass letter and I knew it was in the Wheeler file and the people are likely to find it, I probably don't want that to be out. Even though it's not a smoking gun to him doing sure. anything with underage girls, which right. I've been on the record, I would be very surprised if he did.
Yeah,
I think that Biden had this stuff for 4 years. He didn't come out with anything terrible about Trump. So that sort of shows that at worst, it's probably embarrassing.
So it also shows that it's either not there or the whole thing was so pervasive that it takes everybody down.
Right.
And then power.
Yeah, there could be names on
both
sides.
As I mentioned, power protects power, you know, because yeah. Epstein was known to do that.
Yeah.
To hang with people of all. It didn't matter. He wasn't only Republicans and only Democrats. He was hanging with everybody.
It is the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
Which I remember in like second grade learning that fable and getting it. Like, I remember getting it and going like, oh, I understand what you're trying to say.
Because nobody will tell the king.
You see through him, but mm-hmm. no one's going to say it.
Right.
And Stephen Pinkerton, the professor, was talking about this the other night when I saw him, and he talked about the emperor having no clothes. And he says, in that fable, once the kid said, look, the emperor has no clothes, then everyone was like, yeah.
Right.
We see it too. But it took this kid going yeah. like, this dude's naked.
Right.
What's he doing?
Yeah.
Because before then, everyone knew what they saw, but they weren't brave enough to say anything.
Show back is so broken.
DGS 126.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. you're seeing exactly
you
what
know why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him. And they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And this feeling's still gonna.
Well, Elon Musk is no longer the richest guy in the world.
Aww. Saw this.
Yeah.
Saw this.
It's me.
It's Dave.
Now you're all mine.
You did win the Powerball.
I did.
Rich in friendships.
I didn't get two numbers. I got them all.
Damn it.
Rich in love and fulfillment.
No, it's Ellison who does something. I don't know.
He's the Oracle. Yeah.
I've never heard of him.
And they, yeah, because it's a tech service company with all the AI stuff needing the storage space, all that. That's what they do. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Man, all I can say is I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah. You think Larry Feels Ellison good. Is going to now
it's about
try to
time.
Mess with all of our country?
Feels good.
Now we're mad at billionaires.
Well, I mean, I've been mad at those guys. Not all of them. I'm sure there are some that are fine. There are a lot of others, though, that are too busy trying to keep tilting the rules more in their favor than they already are. I mean, if you've already gotten to being the richest man in the world, I think the rules have done just fine for you. Stop yeah. trying to change them.
I saw a really dumb Amen. Elon thing the other day, if we want to continue to laugh at how dumb he is.
What's that?
he boosted this claim that the AP has written something like 40-some-odd thousand articles about George Floyd since he died, which would equate to about 40 every single day. So he thinks it's like realistic that the AP, the Associated Press, has written 40 articles about George Floyd's every single day since he died. Which is a very funny to just be like, so you just don't even think about things before you say them, do you? Like, you just
But
blast
you also
them out.
You would also think that a genius could do basic math.
Yeah, you would think that, like, even then he'd be like, well, hold on, 40,000, it was like 5 years ago. That's probably not even possible.
Hey, speaking of numbers, and to end this first half hour on a good, positive DGS note, Andrew was just showing me that we already get over 1 million podcast downloads a year, and we just had a big jump.
Yeah.
So
significant jump. The growth is we're growing a lot, people. It's really fun.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks.
Tell people about the show. And if you can't listen live like you are right now, if you're hearing me, go download the podcast. Welcome back, guys. GGSM KMOX 135. Probably shouldn't be saying anything about this on the air yet because it's very early. But my band is working out the possibility of playing out at the Hub, the District in Chesterfield in late October on a Monday night with my band and the Steve Ewing Band.
Hey there.
So that would be pretty cool.
That's not bad.
Yeah, just do a little celebration of the 25th anniversary and bringing the band back after a few years. So be on the lookout for that.
All right.
Nice. And the great thing about it is my band would probably open, you know, play an hour. And then Steve, who's amazing, comes up. And then I can just hobnob with all the people.
There you go.
Yeah. That's
just hang out.
Just hang out.
Get in the mosh pit.
There you go. I'll be the mosh pit. Attorney Brad Young joins us. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Dave.
So I was sharing with the folks at the beginning of the show that I'm in a bad mood, and I think you're going to put me in a worse mood because I think I'm wrong about something. And although I don't mind being wrong, I don't want to be wrong about this because it makes me sad about my country. Yesterday, I was talking about the Supreme Court saying that you know, race and physical appearance and language can be an identifying factor for detaining someone or arresting someone. And I thought that that was a shift and was a change from what the Constitution said, and that you couldn't just look at someone's face and say, I believe you're illegal because you're dark-complected or you're wearing these kind of clothes or XYZ. But I heard you this morning on with Total Information AM, and I think maybe I'm wrong, and that was the law already.
Right. I mean, if you go back and if you want to Google this case, I think it's United States versus Brignone. It's from 1975, and the Supreme Court held, again, whatever that, 50 years ago, that the border control can consider, and this is from the decision, don't hate me for saying this, but from the decision, it says the Border Patrol may consider, quote, Mexican appearance, unquote, as one factor among others in terms of justification for the police or for the Border Patrol, really Border Patrol, not police, but for the Border Patrol to stop a person. But the court went to great lengths in this 75 decision to say ethnicity alone is insufficient for reasonable suspicion. So it has to be their ethnicity plus something else to justify a stop or an inquiry.
And did the Supreme Court change that this week?
No, they didn't. Here is the main difference between what they did this week and what's been the law for over 50 years. The court emphasized back in the 75 decision that the reason the Border Patrol could do that when other police cannot, okay, you can't pull someone over because of how they look. There's a common phrase, driving while black. That's illegal. That's unconstitutional. But the Supreme Court said in 75 that along the border, because you've got the added essence here of if there's going to be illegal immigration from Mexico, they're going to appear to be Mexican because they're coming from Mexico, that they're going to give the Border Patrol a little more leeway. But they limited that geographically. Mm-hmm. So in other words, the Supreme Court said, yeah, if you're at the border, you can use ethnicity as one of several factors to justify stopping someone and checking to see if they're a citizen. But that wouldn't apply in Toledo, Ohio. You know, that wouldn't apply in Birmingham. That only applies along the actual southern border. So the change, if there's any change, would be that the court this week didn't put that kind of a restriction, that geographical restriction on that. So that does represent some degree of a change.
So, Brad, on the front page of Drudge, and of course this is like, who cares? But it just sort of the flavor of the nation right now. On the front page of Drudge yesterday, it had a picture of a few of the Supreme Court justices and said all the president's men. And the article was about how they are rubber stamping everything for Trump. as a very good, smart lawyer and conservative, do you agree with that or do you think that's hyperbole?
I think it's hyperbole for this reason. A lot of the stuff that the court is doing, like, for example, what they did in this particular instance as it relates to the ability of Border Patrol to stop and frisk or to stop and ask for ID, a lot of that's happening on what we call the shadow docket. And the shadow docket is not an opportunity. There's no briefing. There's no oral arguments. It's just the court, like, you know, throwing a Hail Mary out there and we'll deal with the consequences later. They're doing that because they want lower courts to fully decide these issues, and they don't want to make a formal ruling. So they're eliminating these stays that have the appearance of rubber stamping. But really, I think what they're doing is they're trying to force the lower courts to make a decision so that the Supremes can pick apart and analyze what the lower courts do instead of dealing with it as a court of first impression. Does that make sense?
That's why we have you on. Yeah, that makes sense. One more question. Do you guys have anything on this topic before I move on?
I do. Yeah. Brad, in regards to the Brignone-Ponce case you were talking about, you know, you said you can't stop someone just because they look like they could be of Mexican heritage. There has to be something else. Can you give us a couple of examples of what that something else could be that would give cause to stop someone?
Sure. I'm going to create a hypothetical. Let's say that there is a chicken processing plant in Amarillo, Texas, and the ICE gets a tip that there's illegal immigrants working in this chicken processing plant. If they go in and they see a bunch of people who have the appearance of being from Mexican descent, now they have the tip of illegal immigrants working in the facility, plus the appearance of the workers means that they could go and start asking them questions. So if they just drove by and said, hey, there's a chicken processing plant, I bet you there's some illegal immigrants in there, let's check it out, that would not be sufficient because there would be no tip or no additional evidence that illegal immigrants were working there.
So what's the, on the follow-up on all of this, what's the standard for the difference between what you would need to stop someone and ask them, hey, show me your ID, are you a U.S. citizen, whatever, versus just full on arresting someone? I mean, so if you go up to someone and you suspect that they're illegal, but you have no evidence other than the fact that you got a general tip about the factory that you mentioned and they just didn't have their ID on them. Let's say they say it's in my car or it's at my house or I don't have it, whatever. I don't know. We're not knowing at that moment whether that's true or not. Is there enough evidence right then and there to arrest that person?
There would be enough evidence to detain, but not to arrest. And it's easier to discuss this in the example of traffic stops because there's lots of case law on this. Right. There's a very famous case, Terry versus Ohio, which says that you have to have reasonable suspicion of a crime being committed to stop someone and ask them questions. But we've all seen this in TV or TikTok videos. And when the cop comes up, they got a reasonable suspicion you were going 60 in a 55 mile an hour zone. I'm going to pull you over. But once they pull you over, they smell alcohol. They see drugs in the back seat, and now you're arrested. So there has to be, number one, a reasonable suspicion to stop and question. But number two, there has to be evidence of a crime before you can actually be taken down to the pokey and processed and thrown in the slammer. So those are the different standards that we're dealing with, even in this immigration area.
It's fascinating because we're seeing now there are a bunch of cases where the cases are just being dropped by the Justice Department. Like they arrest somebody, they charge them, and then when it's time for court, they're just dropping them because they don't have any evidence. But so they're arresting people without any evidence and then just turning them loose and saying, well, sorry.
Well, you can detain someone, for example, you can detain a person for up to a certain number of hours, depending on state law where you are, or depending on federal law and the circumstances. You can detain someone, but unless you have evidence of a crime, you can't just keep them locked up for no reason. There has to be some sort of charging documents and evidence in order to keep someone behind bars for any more than, you know, 72 hours or 3 or 4 days or something that's nominal until a judge can make an initial inquiry about whether there's enough evidence to keep them in jail. So these situations that you're talking about, I suspect that they ask somebody, hey, show your ID. They said, I don't have any ID. Okay, you're coming downtown with me. We're going to lock you up in some facility. But if they provide evidence, they're out. Or if nobody provides evidence and they just don't want to prosecute, then they're let out. But those folks aren't being, they're not being kept in jail for a very long period of time.
Well, these were cases where they actually got to the point of a trial. And a grand jury says, you got nothing. And then they just drop the charges.
Okay, and well, they had to have like something.
That was the whole point. The point was they're just rounding people up and sorting it out later rather than going by what we're talking about, which is you got to have some evidence. You got to have a reason to talk to that person. You have to have a reason to think that they broke the law. And there have been all these cases pretty recently where they're getting to the point where the grand jury, because I think Jeanine Pirro was asked about this and basically said, well, we can't make the grand juries do what we want. But the grand jury is looking at it saying you have no evidence at all. And then the Justice Department isn't fighting that. They're like, OK, fine. They're gone. You can drop the charges.
Well, I would have to look at those specifics, Wheels, because technically there has to be some type of evidence to hold someone up to the point where they take it to the grand jury. Now, that evidence may be flimsy. That evidence may be suspect or questionable, but there has to be something. You can't, believe it or not, despite what a lot of people may think, you can't just lock somebody up for no reason. There has to be some reason to keep them detained.
All right, that's attorney Brad Young. He's with us a couple, three times a week. Brad, appreciate it as always.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
S-O-K-M-O-X. Today's National TV Dinner Day. Is that even a thing anymore? Isn't every dinner a TV dinner these days? I don't know about you guys, but I'm usually watching TV when I'm eating dinner.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
I always look at it less as a activity and more as a type of
product.
Product.
Like a banquet meal or something.
Like exactly a banquet meal. Like a thing that's got a little dollop of potatoes and a Salisbury steak and a little brownie cooked into the plastic.
I'm with you.
Ooh, kids cuisine.
Couple drops of sweet corn. That's exactly what
kids
I'm talking about.
God almighty, I can't believe how many I bought when my kid was little.
Kids cuisine. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's basically like the Stouffer's kids meals.
Okay. Yeah, it's a banquet meal for kids. It's got like six chicken nuggets and a little
corn.
The little plastic brownie a little corn and a little mac and cheese.
And it's just
there's a penguin on it.
There's a penguin on it that made every kid want it.
Super cute.
I don't know how I missed that with two kids.
I don't know, but it would have been around Nick's time.
Okay.
They're still around.
Nick ate a lot of Lunchables. I made a lot of Lunchable pizzas.
Oh, yeah.
He loved those.
Did you cook them?
Yeah, you microwave them.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were supposed to do that. I thought you ate them cold.
I microwave them as well.
Yeah.
You can eat them cold. Like if it's for like a kid at the lunchroom or whatever, you can. I ate a lot of them cold.
If your family's real poor, you can eat them cold.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is.
Wash it down with a stick of butter. What'd you start to say, Rach?
I was going to ask, are Nick and Shannon the exact same age?
Pretty close.
Yeah, Nick will be 31 in January.
Oh, yeah. He's a little older. Yeah, Shannon's 28.
Okay, that's cool, though.
But, I mean, it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. Same generation of cartoons and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's a good thing Nick has a girlfriend because we could have united the clans.
That'd be dangerous.
Wouldn't it?
Like the old school.
Two of us being the warlords?
The old school. Like that's how we forge our alliance.
Yeah.
Forcing our kids to marry each other.
Isn't that crazy that's like, it's not a story. That happened.
And recently,
hundreds of years.
I think it still kind of happens.
No, it does still happen in certain parts of the world, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of people still like arranged marriages for certain reasons.
It would take some pressure off.
It does take pressure off.
Yeah, but what if you hate them?
It makes a lot of stuff
right.
easier.
I mean, that's the risk you take, but it's all about, like, the strong family unit. Like, you trust your family enough to pick a partner for you that's going to work. Like, I think that's kind of cool.
If you were going in to meet your arranged husband, wife.
Okay.
Would you be more worried that they were disappointed in you or more worried that you're going to be disappointed in them?
Mm,
She's being humble.
Going into the arranged thing?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be totally focused on what I thought. Yeah, I don't know that person.
I would too. I don't think I would necessarily care.
Yeah,
I would grow to care what they thought about
See,
me.
See, and that's my level of insecurity. Yeah. I would be like, I hope they think I'm cute. I'd be looking for any look of disappointment.
So am I like
their
the prettiest girl you've had an arranged marriage with?
I would only feel that way if
the hottest guy you've been forced to marry.
If they've shut down previous arranged marriages, then I'd be like, ooh, I'm not gonna be better than whoever those guys were.
Yeah, that's just, I do get like why in the olden days you did that stuff, because titles had to be passed down or your family loses the land or the money. Like, I mean, I understand it. It's still ridiculous, like, when you think about it on its face. Like, here, go spend the rest of your life with this person who you don't know.
Right, unless you think of marriage as a business transaction.
Which is what it was.
Yeah. Greta Gerwig directed a version of Little Women that came out in, I think, 2018 or 2019. With Timothy Chalamet. Florence Pugh plays Amy. And the way Greta Gerwig had Florence Pugh portray Amy in this film adaptation is so great that she does the little monologue about how it is a business decision for many women. Like, she doesn't have the luxury of caring about romance or love or anything like that.
To Michael in Studio A. Okay.
Let's do it. Take it over, Mike.
Oh, it is 1:54, and we are getting reports, confirmation from the Associated Press and others, that there have been shots fired at an event involving conservative commentator Charlie Kirk at a university in the state of Utah, about 45 minutes outside of Salt Lake City in the town of Orem. This is Utah Valley University. Reports are that Charlie Kirk was shot in the neck. No word confirmed on his condition at this point, but high-profile conservative commentator Charlie Kirk at an event at a university in Utah has been shot, and we are getting more information, and we'll bring you the latest as soon as we can bring it to you, and we'll bring you a wrap-up coming up at 2.
Thank you, Michael.
Wow.
Well, I don't agree with anything he says, but I hope he's okay.
Yeah, no, we can't be shooting people.
Scary stuff.
No, I mean, it can't happen to anyone.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
there's video of it. It's not up close, but there's video of it.
Oh, no.
Well, this is his thing, right? He goes to universities and he debates people and himself out there.
No, he's
a public figure for
he's
sure.
He's a younger guy, and I think he's trying to, you know, kind of trying to reach other younger people.
Dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
That's too bad. Yeah.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.